Amanda, welcome to the show. It's good to have you back. Friend of the podcast, longtime friend of the podcast. We are here, and I'm also there on your show, because this is going to be posted on your feed too, on your Patreon feed. You should all go sign up for Amanda's show, Radio Free Amanda. You can listen to this episode, or you're a patron, you can listen to this episode. I mean, I'm going to do the thing I usually do, which is unlock part of this so people can listen to this. But Amanda, we are here to, first of all, do the thing that we enjoy the most between the two of us, which is laugh at Americans and the things that they do. And specifically to this this TikTok panic, this very bonkers little micro controversy. That's actually not micro controversy, because given the size of TikTok and given like the seriousness of the threats of shutting it down, which like haven't gone away, but it hasn't happened yet. And I feel like this is like the second time around. Maybe we should talk about the first time around with Trump too.
Yeah.
But so like maybe we should sort of talk about that. But I mean, ultimately, it's not a small issue at all, because this is a beloved app for Americans, and it's like a huge amount of content that's generated on it. So like, you know, this is what's, maybe you can kind of explain. I mean, I'm going to link to your article, TikTok on Trial, which was great. It kind of summarized everything. And we're going to, later on in the episode, we're going to go through some of the most bonkers moments from these Senate hearings that only American political system can produce. But before we do that, can you introduce yourself for people who might not have known you? I mean, I don't know how that's possible. You've been on so many episodes, but just in case. And then talk about the article.
Yeah. My name is Amanda. I'm cat content only on Twitter. And I also have a podcast called Radio Free Amanda. And Sina's been on, this is going to be cross-posted to both of our Patreons, but Sina's been on my show, and I've been on Sina's show like multiple times, so we're like pretty much regulars on each other's show. But I wrote an article that came out last week. It's called TikTok on Trial, the latest front in the U.S. tech war on China, and it was basically an analysis of the TikTok hearings, which were just an incredible like political spectacle, just like racist theater, right?
Yeah.
And you brought up a really good point that this isn't even the first time that the US government has tried to ban TikTok. Trump tried to ban it in 2020. I don't know if he like actually tried to ban it, but he definitely tried to force the he wanted to like force the sale of it to Microsoft as well, which is like what That's they're true. Trying to do as well.
and he used the threat of a ban to say that if it didn't go through, it's true. Yeah. It was more. And that time it was like more about control, right? Control of.
I mean, I feel like both times it's really about like this tech war and like this really popular social media app that's used by Gen Z, that like US social media companies like just really cannot compete with, right? Mm-hmm. Like the fundamental issue here is that ByteDance, which is a Beijing-based company, they've developed like what is now the most popular and most frequently downloaded app worldwide. Like it boasts 150 million users in the United States alone. And so that means it's like it's rapidly pulling.
Yeah,
it's half the population of the US, and it's rapidly pulling digital advertising away from its US competitors like Meta, Instagram, you know, which is owned by Meta, Snapchat, stuff like that. Instagram Reels, which is the competitor to TikTok. Mark Zuckerberg launched that in 2020 after as a competitor to TikTok, right around the time that, maybe like after the time that Trump, intended to ban the app. So what this really is, like I think, is that Silicon Valley just cannot compete with TikTok. And so they're using this kind of rising Sinophobic, anti-China racist sentiment that's emerging in this country. They're finding an ally in that, and then using the US government, like the arm of the capitalist class, as a way of eliminating its competitor.
Yeah, no, this is there's a very interesting coalescence of kind of let of sort of where this crisis is located, because yes, you're right that there's a good old fashioned like corporate oligarchic like just sort of like dirty fightingness to it, that like, yeah, the hue a huge force behind this is lobbying money provided by like the people who are losing to TikTok. So these legacy companies that by now, which is crazy because they're like 15 years old. But we call them legacy companies because that's what's like Silicon Valley. But the fact that this app has accelerated so quickly and it's taken over, and it's not even beyond the actual like app itself, that it's the format of, because as these apps have developed, the formats of the social media experience have evolved. Let's say if evolution is evolution, I'm using pretty metaphorically, but let's just say you could say devolve too, but. Because remember, like, think about like the early days, the textual days, mostly textual days of Facebook and Twitter, and preceding that was like the microblogging, like MySpace, and what was the other one? Not I want to say Friendster, but
Friendster, that was the very
Friendster.
first social media
That's true. It was
website.
yeah, that's true. But they were all mostly just text-based and image-based, or like
You're right.
if they had videos, they would be a sort of accessory to the sort of textual basis, which is to say people writing and like commenting and fighting and whatever. And that was like kind of first iteration. And then at a certain point, like then there was a, I want to say like dimensional leap, right? Where we added this thing of like video, where we sort of morphed into recording ourselves. And obviously Instagram was a bridge to this point. I think Instagram and its ability to really just like captivate your eyeballs, like just wash, like that's the like, I didn't use Instagram for a long time. I only started using it when I got a podcast, and that was like 2018. So I missed the real heydays. What was it, 2011, right? 2010 or something, maybe even
I'm not sure
before,
when Instagram
maybe even
was,
before. Like
yeah.
it feels like it was kind of around that time. And those days, it was something that I feel really people captivated, especially people of our generation. So there's all that stuff, and it's been evolving. And then some point in like the mid 2010s, there was this video, this the pivot to video that they kept selling, you know, that killed so many websites, by the way, this like term pivot to video. It happened in a more fundamental sense, in the sense that like the content that we were consuming became predominantly video or video based. I mean, that's not true. People still consume to it. People are still doing text. But it feels like the moment we're in, especially the things that, for instance, show up on my feed, that there had to, like, social media had to catch up to all the visual inputs that we get from our TVs and our phones, and just like the amount of like even GIFs, how they became like the reaction, the way we sort of react. I don't know. I'm kind of pushing it here, but in the sense that like there was a kind of growing technical underlying all this that took us to TikTok, that I feel.
Definitely,
And like
definitely.
and something deeper too, and forget like the video versus audio versus like text or whatever. There's also a development of you became the meme in TikTok. Like you like, I mean, at least in some the American version I know is like people take sounds and they like orchestrate themselves to those sounds. Like they recreate scenarios and they build metaphors out of those, that oh, here's a situation analogous to the thing inside of this sound that's a meme that became popular that I recognize, that oh, like this. And so like there's a whole kind of like linguistic and cultural and kind of like sociolinguistic, I don't know, that's developed too, that's beyond just these apps. I feel that there's like a deeper thing unfolding. Anyways, that was my question to you, was how do we think about this? Yes, there are the sort of material basis the material basis to all of this, and the obviously the rampant xenophobia, and we have to talk about this, the whole thing of the CEO being like, oh, he's Singaporean, mm-hmm, he's Singaporean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, he is ethnically Chinese, but he was born, raised, and like currently lives in Singapore. But yeah, they just, there were, throughout the entire like five and a half hour hearing, they were trying to kind of establish these like very spurious links between him and the Communist Party of China, which like didn't exist. But yeah, they were like very racist in nature.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the racialized nature of this, of like, here are these people moving into our country and they've taken our eyeballs from us, that these legacy apps. So yeah, like there is this coalescence of all these different things that seem to be so prevalent in America. On the one hand, yeah, just to recap, like the sort of dying tech industry and the kind of oligarchy that was built around that, that's rapidly losing its base, and TikTok has hastened that big time. But then the sort of coinciding thing of like American sort of general insecurity, cultural insecurity, and mixed with xenophobia, and also like provincialism, such that like you can't say a positive thing about a movie like Battle of Lake Changjin, right, that I love, that I did like a whole episode about, that's like a great movie, one of the most popular movies ever in China, that like this was not even worth like taking a serious look at, that you just had to instantly dismiss, and then you can't even like buy the DVD, like that, like the Blu-ray, like it's hard to find. Like, it's just like there's such this petty cultural hysteria that's like takes over everything. Anyways, all these things coalescing. But like, what, the fact that like so many Americans have adopted this thing and it's become such like a daily part of their lives, it's like, is it to me that like ultimately trying to sequester and contain China will fail the US and it will only harm it? Or is this just like a one-off?
So I wanted to speak to what you were talking about a few minutes ago about this gradual transition from like text-based media to video-based media, which you're right, like everything is oriented around video now. If you look at TikTok, the engagement that like the most viral videos get, it's like 20 times as many likes and comments as what you would find on a viral tweet on Twitter, right? Or like a well-performing tweet on Twitter. You know, like I do social media, and like as part of our Instagram account, we're really like trying to pivot more toward video, because if you look at the posts of just like photo carousels versus like the Instagram reels that we upload, it's the Instagram reels that like really, really do well. And the photos just like kind of do okay, right? So I don't know, like I think that that has something to do with like this compression, this like gradual compression of our attention spans, and how like we can't like read anymore, like we can't like read anything text-based anymore. We like things we prefer to consume video and watch someone explain something to us. And even, and I was like watching a TikTok, and there was this guy who came up on my feed, and he was like, so like at what point are we, you know, like our attention spans are decreasing and decreasing, and at what point are we like, what is the end goal here? Because, you know, like we used to watch YouTube videos. Like first it was like, you know, if we needed to learn how to do something, we would Google it and we would read it. And then we would be like, at some point we were like, oh, I don't want to read something, I'm going to watch a YouTube video. And then at some point we were like, oh, this video is too long. And then we transitioned over to TikTok, and now everyone's like, I can't watch this TikTok video, I'm going to scroll up because it's too long. Like, I can't watch a TikTok video that's like over 20 seconds or something. So like, are we just like transitioning to like no attention spans at all?
Yeah. It's the full bumblebee life, bumblebee brain life. We just go from one content feed to another and sucking up as much dopamine like pollen as possible.
Yeah. And, you know, like a lot of it, you know, has to do with TikTok itself and the way that it's like revolutionized video. And, you know, like I, like obviously this US attempt at a ban on TikTok, I don't believe in it. But at the same time, this is not me defending TikTok, because I do feel like there are, you know, there are like something, things like, you know, there's like content on there that I think is like harmful, especially harmful to like young women. And I, you know, I myself don't really like this phenomenon that we're talking about, where our attention spans are like getting shorter and shorter and shorter. And I feel it within myself as well. Like I'm not, yeah. But yeah. But I think that also speaks to, you know, like how TikTok and its sister app Douyin in China, you know, they're used, I mean, they're like, they're sister apps, but they're used in very different ways in both countries, right? So in China, you know, they like regulate internet content, right? You can't, they often ban like hate speech and, you know, like Nazi stuff and stuff like that. But also they regulate content for children. And it's like, if you're under the age of 18, then your feed will only show you whitelisted content. And if you're under the age of 14, your feed will, the algorithm will push educational videos like history videos, science experiment videos, stuff like that. Whereas like in the US, there's no kind of like internet content regulation or policing. And it's like basically the Wild West right out here, right?
Well, they do shut down a lot of political stuff around enemy countries. But yeah, generally, as a whole, and that's where it targets its policing. But yeah, the culture of policing of online life is completely different in China than it is in the US. And I think that's clear. And that's also to say that the nature of policing in China is completely different than the US. So like, this is an interesting thing to think of, these two apps evolving in these two very large countries with very different populations, and also with a very different relationship to how the state manages the individual's consumption of media and its relationship to the internet as a whole, right? Because I mean, I try, when I have these conversations, I try to ensure that, like, okay, I have to be like a good academic and be like, okay, so what's the counterfactual to this? The fact that, like, okay, what Amanda just said, for instance, like, okay, they push this, the algorithm, whatever, is pushed towards more educational content. But like, ultimately, if you were seeking out the kind of like the typical garbage that you get on TikTok in America, in China, you could probably find it, I imagine. Like, you can, it's not, I mean, sure, there is that policing thing, but like, and it, what an individual does with their internet experience, you can't, I feel like we can't generalize it to any point. And yeah, we can relate about kind of cultures of textual consumption. And I think you can draw those out and you can say, make sort of blanket statements. I mean, you can make blanket statements, but like you can make general assumptions from the life that we understand being where we grew up and what we know. And, you know, so we kind of have a general, a similar vibe, but ultimately you can say, I think pretty confidently, that the US relationship of how it polices internet behavior is much, much more, is much different than the, than in China. And that is how you can see the difference in these two related apps, as if it's like a weird control.
Yeah. And that has to do with like the state's like relation to capital, right? Like in China, them being, yeah, them like being a socialist country and like doing this like socialist construction, they, you know, they often, you know, they control capital in a way that the U.S. government doesn't, because the U.S. state is basically just an arm of U.S. capital. And that kind of goes into what this whole TikTok ban is all about, right? Because what's behind, what's driving a lot of this TikTok ban is Silicon Valley itself. And like what I said earlier about like them not being able to compete with this Beijing-based app, that was developed in China. A large part of this campaign against TikTok has been waged by Meta, right? Meta is one of the top stocks owned by members of Congress. In 2020, Meta spent like a record $20 million lobbying in Congress. And so, along with Meta, like Silicon Valley and the tech industry overall is a huge political force in Congress. And they have lobbied against bills which promote competition in the tech industry. Meta has also consistently lobbied against legislation that would have forced social media apps to be more transparent about their privacy policies, more transparent about their algorithms and data collection practices. And they've lobbied against bills that would have made them more accountable for the harmful content on their apps. Last year, the Washington Post, they uncovered a bunch of like internal emails that revealed that Facebook actually hired a consulting firm to undermine TikTok and present the app as as a danger to American children and society. And so this firm was instructed to deflect Facebook's own data privacy issues onto TikTok. And the firm was also instructed to publicize stories in local media about dangerous viral teen trends to pressure local legislators to act against TikTok. So operatives from the firm would like contact local news outlets and get them to run stories about these dangerous viral teen trends that they said had originated on TikTok, but a lot of them had actually like originated on Facebook. And they would also, write op-eds and letters to the editor in local newspapers, often posing as concerned parents about how TikTok was a danger to their children and society at large, and that they were worried about the Chinese government being able to access their children's user data. So this campaign was w it waged to enlist media and politicians to help take down Facebook's biggest competitor. And so a lot of this has been the doing of Meta, who has fanned these allegations of the supposed dangers of TikTok in order to undermine its competition.
Yeah, I mean, it's like the oldest story in like the American capitalist book is to attack your rivals and try to maintain as much monopolistic control. I mean, it's like this is the cutthroat world, and especially it helps the fact that TikTok, by nature of the fact that it's based in Beijing, is the outsider to like a small group of apps. We're talking like a few, right? I mean, forget the fa I mean, we talked earlier about the sort of evolution of the internet, and it's interesting, like you and I, our age is the exact, like we are the exact demographic. Like they did, like you and I are basically the same age. And like we grew up on the internet in the most profoundly shocking and disturbing ways possible. Like somebody tweeted this. I was like, oh, when I was a kid, I played Flash games and I watched beheading videos. And it was like, yeah, that's what we did on the internet. And that like we lived this like weird social experiment. And now we're in this phase of it where like this, the intensity of the consumption, like for instance, even just the data. Think of like the data of like a tweet versus like a 10 minutes. Some TikTok videos are 10 minutes. I think 10 minutes. They have like a 10 minute limit, I think,
I
or
think
something like that.
that seems kind of long for TikTok. I
Or
think.
8 minutes, or like some. I know they had an extension, maximum length of. Anyways, it doesn't matter. But anyways, like some of them are pretty long. So like, just think of like all the amount of like information loaded into just that single thing. And it's just like so mind-boggling, and how. Like, I mean, at the end of the day, though, is that this TikTok panic is also a product of the American political system, whereby you have this incentivized, like corporations and, and like the mafiosos and like, that run sort of very oligarchic, sort of oligarchic mafios that run various sectors of the American economy, which is to say they have a certain amount of control over that sector of American capital that, like, oh, it's like a few hands, that's all. Basically, in one state, California, and it's like it's easy to then manipulate the political system of, say, that state, California, a very large, very important state to how the U.S. functions, because it's just that's how American politics works. It's you just pay people, and they become concerned, right? I mean, we know how the Zionist lobby works. And so why shouldn't Meta do this? This is just normal behavior for a mafia, for like, you know, a mafia family that's sensing that like, oh, they're under threat. So like, I feel that like, there's nothing like shocking about this. I mean, the levels of racism were, of course, this is America. Are you kidding me? Like it shouldn't be shocking, but it still is. Just like the blatant, just the end, but also the stupidity. So maybe we should, which again, isn't shocking. We're talking about America. Like, we should go through some of the most egregious videos, because that Senate hearing was quite something. I just lost the tweet. I just lost the, I had your tweet lined up.
Yeah, and you know what's like really, it's like kind of really gross about these videos is that, you know, like we live in the age of social media now. And so, you know, no one's going to watch like all 5.5 hours of the hearings on C-SPAN. I turned it off after 1.5 hours.
Wow, 1.5 hours.
I know, right? Really had to push myself through it. But I turned it off because it was just this, like him being asked the same questions over and over again by different members of Congress. And the reason that they kept asking him the same questions over and over again is because we live in an age of social media. So they all wanted a viral clip of them.
Yeah, that's
questioning him and like, really, really trying to indict this person and like really trying to, forge a link between him and the Communist Party of China. And they all did go viral, but not viral for the reasons that they had intended.
But that's the thing in American life. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if you're being laughed at or if you're being cheered at, as long as you're getting the clicks, as long as you're getting the views. I mean, really, it is the producers. I'm sorry, this is a tired metaphor, but it's like, and it's a boomer metaphor, for God's sakes, listen to me. But like, they're really, it's better to fail and to do this stuff. And it's better to make yourself look like an idiot online and get people laughing at you, because that's what like cultural jihad is. That's what politics in the US is, just cultural jihad by other means, you know, because that's what they can do. And so like just yelling at local Asian men that they recognize as like part of the problem is like fun for them, and it's sport, and they eat it up. And as you said, like they get that's why they ask the same question. So I have the first one lined up. I'll share my screen with you and I'll just clip these in. But oh my God, these people are so, how did these people rule the world for so long? That's my question. That's always my question.
Do you agree that the Chinese government has persecuted the Uyghur population?
Well, it's deeply concerning to hear about all accounts of human rights abuse. My role here is to explain what our platform does on this.
It's a pretty easy question. Do you agree that the Chinese government has persecuted the Uyghur population?
Congresswoman, I'm here to describe TikTok and what we do as a platform. And as a platform, we allow our users to freely express their views on this issue and any other issue that matters to them.
That's not true.
Well, you didn't answer the question.
Okay, so once again, this man was born, raised, and currently lives in Singapore. So they're trying to make that connection between him and the Chinese government, right? Second of all, why is that an appropriate question to ask in a hearing where he's there to talk about his social media app? Like, how is that relevant? And like, third of all, this lady, like every other member of Congress who questioned him, they like refused to allow him to answer the question. And they just like completely talked over him.
Yeah. Okay. I think this is the same woman, the Florida.
No, this is a different woman.
Oh, this is a different one. Sorry. Look, oh my God.
They have like
I did one right racism. I did one unit of racism, but it was okay. It was against Karens. It's okay.
Yeah. So
it's
the previous member of Congress, like if you're listening to this, she was like a middle-aged bleach blonde white woman. And then this video that he's getting ready to pull up is also of like another, this like middle, she looks middle-aged bleach blonde white woman, but I looked her up and this woman is 36 years old.
Oh my God.
She
what?
Looks 55.
She's younger than me?
Oh my God. Oh my God. I'm sorry.
Okay, we're going to press play.
One, as was what pointed out by Chairwoman Rogers, you have regular contact with Chinese Communist Party Secretary, Mr. Zhang Fuping, who is your boss at ByteDance, correct?
No. He's neither my boss, nor do we have frequent contact.
But you have regular contact with ByteDance.
With the CEO of ByteDance.
Who is Mr. Zhang Fuping, is the editor-in-chief.
He's not
my colleague, Representative Burgess. A few minutes ago exposed that TikTok and ByteDance share legal teams. You confirmed this, correct?
Our general counsel is an American lawyer, veteran of Microsoft.
Also, my colleague, Representative Latta, confirmed that your parent company, ByteDance, currently can access user data. Yes?
We have to be more specific.
Yes.
After you Project say, Texas? No.
I'm not asking after Project Texas. I'm asking now. Yes.
She's just
some
putting
user data
words
is public data, Congresswoman.
Mouth. Yes.
Which
yes.
means
you
everybody...
What's interesting to me is that you've used
access
the word transparency over a half.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it's like very clear from their questioning that they don't really have like any sort of understanding of how, you know, technology or phones or social media algorithms, how they work. And I think they're like kind of relying on the people watching to not know how they work either. Which is, you know, totally fair. You know, I think a lot of people who are watching it on C-SPAN are older and probably kind of racist and anti-China, and they probably don't understand how like TikTok works and how user data works. So, do you have the like probably the most egregious example of this is the does TikTok connect to the Wi-Fi video?
Is that Mr. Is that the guy from Georgia?
It's a guy.
Oh, I see it. Yeah. Okay. Wait, let's do the Georgia one. We'll save the Wi-Fi one for dessert. That'll be
okay.
Is this, I cannot, this is painful. Actually, I thought this would be fun, but this is actually painful to like, listen to this stuff. Like, I don't know. I got snippets of it from your tweets and that was enough for me, but I'm going to have to listen to these things because wow. Do you agree that Chinese, oh, it's here. Sure.